Capitalist activist Rob Herzhoff joins us to talk about the story that is certainly occupying the business community in South Africa, the judgment that was handed down this week by Judge Denise Fisher against the former executives and the founder of Dimension Data. Rob, you know the people involved. You know Dimension Data, the company. We've both been around long enough to remember when it was the darling of the stock market before it was acquired. Well, then it took a tumble. Then it was acquired by the Japanese company NTT. But this judgment that Judge Denise Fisher put through this week is it's not just rattling cages. It's quite shocking in many respects.
It certainly is. I mean, I 2 days ago, I got sent this document by two friends of mine who said, this has just come out a day ago. You've got to read it. It's like a crime novel. And I've never really read a judgment before, but I started reading it and it's, I don't know how many pages in it. It's 100 pages or so, 75. And it is a crime novel. I mean, I couldn't put it down. The fact that I do know a number of the people makes it even more pertinent and even sadder to read it. And, you know, why am I being asked about it? I'm not a lawyer. I'm a businessman. Is because I also then got a number of messages from friends of mine, including some prominent black buddies of mine who said, aha, Rob, you know, this is bad behavior by capitalists, by corporate chieftains, by people who've been held in such high regard. And there you are sort of saying capitalism works, capitalism is good, and these look like they're bad people. So, you know, it does look like they've done bad. It really does. It's not a good story to be reading about South Africa.
Give it to us in a nutshell. What happened?
So, assuming that the judgment is correct, which one, you know, Judge Fisher's done a very thorough job, it looks like the following has happened. That six prominent business people, all white, all known to many of us, and all highly respected, who, you know, some of whom have built Didata into one of the great success stories of South African technology and South African business, fabricated the acquisition of the Didata campus, which is in Johannesburg, in Bryanston, a data center, a golf club, and an art collection, which was part of the campus, at a ridiculously low price, where the company buying these four assets, and I think it ended up only being the campus and the art collection in the end, at this ridiculously low price of 1.4 billion rand, ejecting other potential buyers, including Patrice Motsepe's African Rainbow Capital, which is a real estate buyer, persuaded the Japanese that the buyers were a BEE group of mainly women. At least 51% of the buying group were BEE women. Not true. Buying at a ridiculously low price, where two members of the buying party were actually sitting on the board of the selling company advising them to sell and at what price to sell. So this is fraud, but it's a fraud of the most unsophisticated Keystone Cops variety. I mean, when you read it, you go, you know, these people are supposed to be sophisticated, you know, business people. And it's the most amateur fraud ever. I mean, most frauds are sophisticated. This is just done in a way that you think they know the rules. What the hell are they doing? And why it's an affront to me, and it's so sad because some of these people I really have liked. I really admired them and liked them. Why it's so sad to me is on a number of levels. You know, it's an abuse of BEE, and I've never been a fan of BEE, but it's a real abuse of BEE by six white corporate chieftains who've always been held in high regard. It's an affront to foreign direct investment. You know, Entity Docomo is one of the biggest companies in the world, and they've been ripped off. So this thing is just dreadful from a number of different angles. It's dreadful. It's dreadful for South Africa. It's dreadful for FDI. It's dreadful for BEE or anti-BEE. From a number of fronts, this really is an embarrassing, embarrassing story.
I notice you have purposefully not mentioned any names, and I presume that's because there could be an appeal. Perhaps the judge has got it wrong. It does happen.
Yes. Now, it'd be very interesting to see if there is an appeal. A good point there, Alec. If there is an appeal, you know, usually when people appeal, it's because they've been wronged by the judgment. You know, the judge got this wrong, Arlo has dropped the ball, or there's something missing in the story, we're appealing. And let's wait and see. If there is an appeal, you're going to have to wait for the appeal to go through. But this judgment is damning. It's damning, damning, damning. And the reason I haven't mentioned names, and the names are all in here, Jeremy Ord, Stephen Nathan, Grant Bodley, Saki Masiakros, Doc Watson, Jason Goodall. When I know all six of them, there's a reason I don't want to mention that. It saddens me to have read what has happened. Really does.
Rob, also to put in perspective, the company that they built, Dimension Data, was sold to NTT Docomo, a big Japanese firm. And the Japanese were presumably, from what I've read of the court judgment, relying on those executives who'd stayed on. So they sold the business to the Japanese and they continued working for them. And in this way, try to pull a fast one. So I guess the question is, the Japanese are also taking a very, very hard line. Part of the judgment, if I read correctly, said that those who were the protagonists, as Judge Fisher called them, were prepared to walk away from it, but the Japanese were not prepared to let them go. They want justice.
Yes, I think the will walk away from the deal, or we'll give the money back, or we'll make sure, you know, make sure everyone's whole, is the kind of, we're guilty, let us out of here, please. That's what it sounds like. You know, the fact, I mean, Steve Nathan was on both sides of the story. He was negotiating in good faith, supposedly getting the best price possible. But their emails saying, you know, basically saying, we're doing this at this price and that's that. We're not having any outside investors coming in, outside competition for bids coming in, which means the $1.4 billion was dirt cheap. And I think from what I read, the six protagonists, including Stephen Nathan, were putting up 65 million rand only, and the balance of the 1.4 billion was being vendor financed by NTT Docomo. So NTT were funding this deal, where the buyers putting up 65 million of 1.4 billion. And it's clearly worth a hell of a lot more than 1.4 billion. Let's say it's worth 2 billion or 1.5 or 1.6 billion. You know, they're not only not having to finance it, but they're making 500 million rand for doing nothing. A steal.
Two issues here. From the first perspective of foreign investment, the fact that there is malfeasance in a society goes without saying. But as a foreign investor, at least in the South African context, you can get satisfaction and recourse to the courts. Is that not a good thing that the Japanese multinational will look at and say, well, we know that the law actually works in that country?
Absolutely right. So Judge Fisher has done a huge body of work, and it's, you know, in a relatively complex area where people don't understand private equity, bidding processes, valuations of these sort of things, that the judge has done a sophisticated job. The document's, you know, well structured, well thought through. And you know, a lot of the evidence is there in plain sight. So I think for foreign investors, this will be upholding the rule of law. Yes, a positive. But it's very worrying that, you know, here we are saying socialism doesn't work. Capitalism is the way to go. And yet sort of six of our most prominent proponents of corporate behavior, executive behavior, you know, regulated behavior are falling foul of the law and behaving badly.
And it's not like they need the money.
Well, they must have made the ones anyway, you know, Jeremy and Doc and the others must have made a lot of money and deservedly so when they sold Didata to NTT. Why would they want to go back and have another bite at the cherry? You'd think you've made enough money, go do something different.
I guess one also has to remember that Dimension Data was almost going bankrupt until Johann Rupert stepped in and bailed them out some years ago, which enabled Jeremy Ord and co. to rebuild the company. But I wonder how he's feeling about his friends.
Yeah, one wonders. One wonders because, I mean, he's not tarnished in any way. Because he stepped in at the right time, saw the value, believed in the people, backed the company. And, you know, when the business was sold to the Japanese, he hopefully made an exceptional return as he so deserved and moved on. So he's not, it's not his issue here, other than the fact that he's probably looking and going, these boys are being very naughty.
Yeah. The other issue,
state of affairs.
The other issue here is BEE as a whole. It does make otherwise honest people dishonest. Okay, this could have been a deal where if these guys had the intent of defrauding the Japanese, if the judge is right, they would have found another way of doing it, presumably. But BEE is a very convenient fronting mechanism for many people. And although this is a spectacular case, It's certainly by no means alone. There are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of similar type of fronting schemes where the true beneficiaries are not actually BEE people in the sense that the spirit of the law would suggest it.
I mean, BEE is a disaster. It doesn't work. It's a mess. It's an anti-capitalist, unfair system that doesn't work. But it's easy to solve these problems. You know, having read this crime novel, it would have been very easy if this was an honest transaction to announce who the BEE women investors were. Just be transparent. But Steve Nathan didn't want to do that. He said, no, we're not revealing who the investors are. Well, then, if you're not going to do that, and the seller is not going to demand the name, say, well, if we're going up a BEE ranking, we're going up two notches to level two, which is what the Japanese wanted to achieve in process. That was part of the whole excitement of doing the deal.
I suppose there's still the possibility that they didn't know or it was hidden from them. We've had many issues of this type. When you, you just go forward, Rob, and we've had Marcus Uster in South Africa, and that left a very bad taste. This, if everything that we read in the judgment, and truly, if you can't believe your judges, then who can you believe? If this crime novel is not fiction, it's another issue, not quite on the Steinhoff level because of scale, but it is a significant issue of bad operating in South Africa. Capitalism generally in this country is on the back foot. This surely it requires some kind of an aggressive response from those who do promote capitalism like yourself.
100%. If you look at the Uster fraud, and I think everyone knows now that Uster was defrauding everybody, you know, he not only conned everyone around him, he also conned Christo Visa, because Christo put a lot of trust in him, believed in him, and lost a fortune as a result. So you know Christo was honest, decent, and was conned by Marcus Uster. But the Marcus Uster, the case, the whole Steinhoff case, would have been unbelievably, or is unbelievably difficult for any juror to understand. How do you have a jury getting their heads around what Marcus Uster did if sophisticated people sitting on the board with Uster, including Christo and others, couldn't get their heads around it? I mean, how do you ever get your head around that? But this is as clear as the driven snow. If you assume the judgment is correct, which one has to, you know, it's an unsophisticated fraud. It's ridiculous. You know, I mean, what was Steve, Nathan, what was he thinking? You know, he was the investment banker. He's a sophisticated corporate financier. And this is just amateur. You know, it's idiotic. Why they did that, I don't know. Crazy.
So what happens next? If we are to presume that NTT is as good as its word, fraud charges being laid against Jeremy Orr, Doc Watson and Co.
All six are going to get charged. And I think this is my reading. Let's just take my view that there's guilty and very guilty. The two guys who were sitting on the board of the seller, Jeremy and Jason Goodall, I think I've got those names right, are the very guilty ones because they were sitting on the board of the seller, advising the seller to sell to a consortium in which they were hidden as two of the buyers. The others were sitting just on the side of the buyers, but they would clearly have known what was going on. And then Steve Nathan was supposed to give independent advice. He was an independent director and the corporate financier. And obviously, he was supposed to have got the best price possible, wouldn't you think? And I think there were two or three other interested bidders, including African Rainbow Capital, you know, Patrice Motsepe's investment company, which has the two Johans, Johan van Zyl and Johan van der Merwe there, two super sophisticated, intelligent guys, and they like real estate investments. And I believe they were very keen at having a look, but were kind of, you know, dissed off by Steve Nathan. That's what it seems like, because he didn't want the price to go above $1.4 billion. And it was clearly worth a lot more than that.
You might recall that some years ago, the former chairman of Dimension Data had a go at them because of more than R1 billion that he said he had been cheated out of through the bonus scheme and system, etc. It was all over the Sunday Times and all over the South African media.
Sure.
And nothing seems to have come of that. Presumably, this judgment is going to embolden him to return.
Which chairman? Who was the chairman?
He was the former DG.
Moss and Gershang?
It wasn't Moss. No. It was the former DG of the Department of Telecoms who left the Department of Telecoms and then went into the private sector and became chairman of Dimension Data and was there for a period of time. His name, I just thought about it as we were talking, Rob, so his name escapes me, but I will actually put it into the show notes a bit later. The point was it was a very high-profile attack that he made on Didata, claiming money that he said was due to him, but because he'd been excluded from certain deals, etc. All I'm saying here, or what I'm saying here, is that leopards don't change their spots, and certainly not as you go forward. So I did, by the way, try to get hold of Jeremy Orr. I did get a response from Jeremy Orr to say that they are working on a statement and that he will get back to us on that. When we do get that statement, we certainly will either have an interview.
If they're innocent, good for them. They should appeal the judgment and they should have their lawyers stand up and say, here are the flaws in the judgment.
Well, you are better informed than 99% of South Africans, given that you know the people and that you have studied those 75 pages. I'm sure that the full judgment is up on BizNews now, so there are going to be others who would find the crime novel, as you say, of interest. Rob Herzog, capitalist activist, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.